For this talk this morning, I was going to talk on the importance of inspiration, not only just for your life, but for your meditation. Because sometimes what happens, if you've been meditating and meditating and meditating and getting bored and bored and bored, when nothing is happening, and you just hang out for the breakfast, the lunch, and the joke session in the evening. Without those, you don't know what you do. Then sometimes, can we sort of heal that problem? You know, the dullness, meditating again and again and again. Or just like me, another retreat, another talk, another interview, here we go again. You know, life can be really boring for a monk. You know, the same old, same old. It's very rare that I ever get a question which is new. All the questions are repeat questions. I've heard them so many times before. Just like you've heard my stories so many times before. So life can sometimes be a bit dull. So in order to stop that, both on this retreat and when you get back home in life generally, it's really important to develop inspiration. Inspiration is nothing more than the deliberate looking at the beautiful bricks in the wall and not seeing the two bad ones. It's actually feeling there is something really worthwhile and good and lovely and happy and joyful and beautiful in this world and focusing on it, deliberately developing inspiration. And I certainly have learned in my years as a monk to do that, because sometimes as a Buddhist monk you get into so many weird situations. You know, like, I've already told you about, you know, being photographed in the toilet, trying to find a nice cave to meditate in, and people coming up and asking you where you come from, and how many brothers and sisters have you got. There's also, I like telling that story. I'd been teaching a retreat in Malacca, and driven back from Malacca to the airport to get a flight back to Perth. And I've been talking all the time, and even in the car, people think, oh, we'll drive you to the airport. All that means is they've got you caught, and they can ask whatever questions they like. You can't escape. And then eventually, you get to the airport, you check in, get on the aircraft. Ah, at last, free. I can just sit down, meditate, have a sleep, whatever I need to do, I'm totally free. And then I was sitting there, window seat. So now if you're in an aisle seat, there's too many people, two people on either side, who knows, they may start talking. So window seat is the best, so at least, you know, there's a window I can't talk to or can't ask questions of me. And then there's a guy sitting next to me, everything was going perfect. And then coming down the aisle, boarding after me, this woman stopped at me and looked at me and said, are you Ajahn Brahm? I said, yeah, yeah. She said, I've always wanted to have a talk with you about some problems. I said, well, look, I mean, you know, the person sitting next to me, so we can't do that. And then what she did, she asked the guy, would you mind exchanging seats? And I was using every ounce of my psychic power to say, say no, say no, say no. And he said yes. Oh, that was so disappointing. She was on the aisle seat, I was on the window seat, I just couldn't get out, asking all these questions about a relationship all the way to Perth. Oh, well, that was not a very nice flight. But, so what did you do in the end? Okay, you can moan and groan and get depressed or get upset or do something, but that is not the Buddhist way. The Buddhist way, just get inspired. You know, there's a person there just really wants to ask some questions, wants to do something good in their life, wants to change and make something positive out of a difficult situation. I can help her. Wonderful. So as soon as I start getting inspired, then all the energy comes up. And instead of having a terrible flight back to Perth, you can have an enjoyable one. It all depends not on what you're experiencing, what you're watching in meditation, but how you are experiencing it again. The attitude you have to what you are doing in life. And if you can have this inspiration, in other words, look at these negative situations and find something good in it, find something positive in it, And then you get energy and happiness, and even in meditation you get much more depth in your meditation. So in the meditation you get inspired. Every retreat somebody gets into jhanas, and there are still a few slots available. So that could be you, and you say, well, just as Ajahn Brahm said, these are ordinary people who never think they're going to get jhanas. They're sitting here. Maybe the last retreat they sat in the mat that you're sitting on now. You may be sitting on the lucky mat. Who knows? But at least it inspires you. I was telling the monks a few days ago that when I went to Sri Lanka the first time, you know, I wasn't well known and famous, so you could actually travel around and look at things in those days. It's easy, you could only give talks and interviews and talk to people on the plane coming back. But I went over to Mahindalay. That's where Arahat Mahinda landed in Sri Lanka. And then in the evening, I spent the evening in this monastery in the area, this ancient monastery. And they put me up in a cave. And the inscription was over the top of the cave. That cave was built in about the 5th century AD. It was about 1,500 years old. And had been used by monks for centuries. And now it was my turn to use that cave. And when I sat meditation there, wow, that had energy, that had power. And I started to think, how many monks over 1,500 years have got into jhana on this very seat? How many of them became stream winners and once returners and non-returners, arahat? 1,500 years, there are bound to be a few. And then I got really inspired. Yeah, wow, this is great. And even though I've been busy all day, all the time this when you had this great energy, if you inspired yourself to bits and had great meditation. Imagine you can do that. Sit in the cave. 1,500 years. People have been meditating there. I remember went to a place in northeast Thailand and it was called Ajahn Brahm's Rock. He'd meditated in that cave and he sat in that rock many, many times. And now I was sitting on that seat. Wow. And I don't sort of downplay that. I don't say, ah, don't be stupid. You're just making this up. All the monks who sat in this cave were probably scallywags. They're just not really good monks. No, you never look at the negative. You look at all the positive energy. You inspire yourself. And you get this big boost of clarity, mindfulness, energy, and whatever else you want to use, just from simple inspiration. And that is certainly what I do to give myself energy. Just like you. You get up early in the morning and you got to sit here. And then you do the chanting in the morning. In Thailand, that morning chanting we used to do, which was translated into Thai, that was the most depressing thing we ever did. If ever I thought of committing suicide, it was at the end of this morning chanting. It went on for such a long time. And you think, if our chanting is not in key, or 3 o'clock in the morning, monks and lay people trying to chant, it's disgusting, it's terrible. And they go, yes, that's what it sounded like, I'm not exaggerating. Just the memory just starts to make me feel a bit sick. I'm suffering post-traumatic stress just even remembering it. But learning from that, look, you do some chanting, so you put some energy and inspiration in it. Yo, so, the sadhu, 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 the kangaroo hop, whatever you're doing in the meditation, you've got inspiration and energy, and straight away you start off not with dullness, but with power. Good power. And the Buddha actually said to do that. Then all the 40 meditation objects he did, a lot of them are inspiration. Like people just think of the Buddha. And if you really got some idea, if you're like a faithful Buddhist, and you know, you've been around Buddhism a long time, you've grown up with Buddhism or whatever, the idea of a Buddha is something incredibly powerful. Just think of the Buddha. You can think that just like him, before he was enlightened, He didn't know what jhana was. Oh, he actually did. But he didn't really know sort of what the Dhamma was. He was just sitting down, letting go, making peace. And all these experiences, which you experience, even the tiredness, the restlessness, the thought, a Buddha experienced those too. Just where you are now, he was once. But he carried on. These incredible meditations, they just came to him. And he became this incredible person, just like you can become. Just this little great thing about Buddhism. The Buddhism is not a special person in the sense that, you know, what he did, no one else can do. It's always repeated. And every one of you, if you ever do get into jhanas, this is one of the things which always gives me goosebumps. Now you think that when you're in a jhana, you are sitting in the place where the Buddha sat. That is his holy chair, if you want to call it a holy chair. It's one of the sutras, the great simile, the elephant's footprint, which actually, by the way, was the first teaching Mahinda gave when he landed in Sri Lanka. And it says, how can you recognize a Buddha? It says, by his footprint. And what are the four footprints of the Buddha? First, second, third, and fourth jhana. Because when your mind experiences a jhana, that is precisely the same experience, no difference in any iota from the experience the Buddha had under the Bodhi tree. You're getting an understanding of the mind of a Buddha when you get into a jhana. It's no different. When I remember that, now that is really inspiring stuff. And you're getting close to that, what it's like to be a Buddha, re-experiencing, no different. The body's gone, time's disappeared, but the experience is the same. That really gets you fired up. So when I remember that, wow, okay, I'm going to be a Buddha now. That gives you the energy, the inspiration, and that gives you the mind, the drive. It's not done through willpower. Willpower is coming outside, driving you, pushing you. Inspiration is coming from inside, and it just makes everything bright and inspiring and gives you lots of energy. And if not, the Buddha doesn't inspire you, the Dhamma, they say, or the Sangha. All these great monks and nuns you've known over the years, if you didn't even know them, you read about them. Incredible things which have been done. Or the Buddha, the Dhamma, the teachings, which have just really just helped so much. Creating peace and harmony in your life and others. So you don't just say, yeah, the Dhamma. You stop and you really allow the mind to play in that area. To play, to investigate, to hang around until you really start getting energy coming up. And you can feel that inspirational energy. It's something you develop. I know that people in the West get very cynical. We develop great cynical energy in us. Yeah, those monks, they're not real monks. Yeah, I bet that when everyone goes home, they have a party and go and get drunk. And that's actually what the builders here, we caught the builders building Jhana Grove years ago. Now they'd seen us coming around, they were discussing these monks. Yeah, they said, in the Saturday evening, they invite the nuns over for a party. That's what the builders were saying. So then, no, we don't do that. And just after a while, you know, we invite them over to see actually how we do behave. But people were so cynical, always doubting, saying, no, this can't be true, it can't be pure monks, it can't be jhanas, you can't experience them these days, people say. People are so cynical, always doubting, and say, no, it can't be done. But yeah, it can be done, you see it. Even building this place, or building Bodhidharma Monastery. I remember years after we built this, even the monastery over the road, people came up and said, look, I know when you started, you wanted to build this monastery. I never thought you'd manage it. It was just too big a job. Inspiration makes it happen. Even as they building this place here, it was inspiration made it happen. You know, because a lot of... I kept on asking the builder, look, we're having an opening ceremony on Easter. It was actually Easter 4 years ago, wasn't it? So it was 4 years ago. We're having the opening ceremony now, and it's about, oh, it's in December. Are you going to be ready in time? No problem at all. We will be ready in time. Never trust a builder. And 2 weeks before, they came, no, we can't finish it in time. But we've got all the people coming from overseas. We're starting a retreat. What do you mean? Now you say you can't. Well, you just can't finish it. You know that we can't do this. And I said, we will finish it. And of course we did. Just, you know, with Mike's help and everybody else's help. Just a couple of hours before the ceremony began. About 4 o'clock in the morning. Well, actually, I knew that would probably happen. But the inspiration. All these monks just getting in there and just helping out. All the lay people getting in there and helping out. That's inspiring. That's actually the way things should be done. Insurmountable problems. And then afterwards, it works. Okay, now do you want to hear about psychic power? There is one miracle. I've got no hesitation of repeating and telling people, because this really was something weird and strange. And if you ask Ajahn Brahmad, he's been with me for years, he said this is one thing which, cynical as he is, you know, he studies the suttas, always very, very good, very sort of critical. If it doesn't make sense, he will say so. He said, yeah, that was a real miracle. And some of you were here when it happened. That was when we did our 30th anniversary of our Buddhist society in Western Australia. It was on Waisak Day, 2003 or something, 4, 5, 6, somewhere around that time. I think 2003 maybe, the 30th anniversary. And at that time our president said, he actually reminded me, let's do some celebration, let's have a little fundraiser or something. But I am a Leo rabbit by birth. And Leos, if we're going to do something, we really put everything into it. Just like the three sadhus. You know, that's if you have a monk who's a Leo, they always like roaring. They're lions. Sadhu! Rawr! That's our character. So I said, no, if we're going to do it, we're going to do it 150%. Really put everything into it. And so we did it. And so we hired the Supreme Court Gardens in Perth. Central Field in Perth. Really visible. Everybody could see it. And everything was perfect. That year, the Waisak, the real full moon day, was on a Sunday, when everybody had the day off. It was full moon, it was on a Sunday. Usually we have our Waisak on a Sunday anyway, whether it's full moon or not, the nearest one. But this one, perfect alignment, full moon was on a Sunday. And I thought, nah, the other people had booked that place for sure, but it was free that day. It was almost like a miracle, it was free. So everything was perfect. And we got all these people to come, including, at that time, the Premier of Western Australia, Dr. Jeff Gallop. He came as well. And the other dignitaries, such as, you know, ambassadors and stuff, they came. And we had everything arranged. And I told the people, look, forget about the money. Forget about how much it's going to cost. We're going to do this to the best. We are going to celebrate that Buddhism has arrived in Western Australia. So no expense was spared. All the monks were helping out, but that morning, that Sunday morning, when I woke up, it was raining. You don't mind a bit of rain, but we checked the weather forecast. A storm was coming to Perth. A big storm. One of the biggest. And it was going to hit Perth at 7 p.m., precisely when we were to begin our ceremony. This was really good fun. And so we all got in our van, and we drove, you know, from Bodhinyana to Perth, and it was pelting down with rain. It never stopped all morning. And I got to say sadhu, especially to the Thai women. We had a big Buddha statue from Thailand, which is now in our hall in Perth. They moved it outside. They put the platform up on all these showers, and they were soaking wet. You know, there are, you know, Thai people always dress up. Mascara running, hair a mess. High heels getting stuck in the mud. That's Thai. Very sweet, but that's what they're like. But they carried on. And three times the Premier's office, you know, his offsiders, they gave a call, and I called it on a mobile. Are you cancelling? I said, no, of course not. He said, but the storm's going to get worse. We can't do the ceremony outside. No, we're not cancelling. Three times I said, no, we are not counseling. And we had one of our members. He was, you know, Brian Creek. He was an ex-sailor. He's merchant seaman all his life. He was the first one to take me aside and said, look, I've been checking on the weather bureau. The pressure is going down, down, down. I've been at sea all my life. We know that means storm and a heavy one. You have to cancel. And I said, no. And then there was a monk at that time. And there's someone here knows him very well because you married him. That's Angela's husband, Chris. And he's a really good guy, but he took me aside as well. You know, pulled me aside by shoulder and said, Ajahn Brahm, I've got so much faith in you. I've ordained with you. You're my teacher, but you're making an idiot of yourself. Cancel. Please, he said. No. That's incredible inspiration and faith you needed for that. And of course, you know what happened. If it had all gone pear-shaped, I wouldn't be telling the story. About 1 hour before the ceremony started, the rain stopped. About half an hour before, I always remember Shirley Jackson, she's dead now. I always remember her coming into the tent while I was arranging the VIP chairs, because I'd give a hand as well. Just because you're a boss monk doesn't mean you don't get dirty and wet like everybody else. So I was arranging the chairs. She came in, she was crying. Ajahn Brahm, you've got to come outside, you've got to come outside. And my thought was, oh God, and something else has gone wrong. Someone's broken their leg or something. I thought it was something gone wrong. That's why she was crying. But when she came out, she just pointed up with tears in her eyes. Full moon had come out. The clouds had parted. And a beautiful full moon was right up in the sky above Perth. And that was a miracle. We did that ceremony. It didn't rain. There was a slight shower in the middle. You know, very, very, very light. And as soon as we finished, full moon went away. This is no exaggeration. And the rain came pouring down. Really pouring down. For those of you who know Perth, that field, Supreme Court Gardens, was under 2 inches of water in the morning. I've never seen that since. And the freeway, Kwinana Freeway, was flooded and closed that morning. That's how heavy the rain was. Not so many people came. And I asked them afterwards, why didn't you come? You had the ceremony? I said, of course we did. Didn't you get wet? Of course not. Because to the east, the west, the north and south of Perth, it was such a heavy storm, trees were coming down. Rain was lashing. They just could not believe that we held that ceremony that day. And the person, the company who hired out the marquees and the chairs, it was a company called Reese Hire. They sent an email. And they said, I was to the organizer, and the organizer sent it back to me. He said, we don't know who this Ajahn Brahm is, but can you please ask him who's going to win the horse racing today? I still got that email somewhere. That was powerful. And of course, it's so much hard work, and you hardly sleep that night, because we had to take the Buddha statue now over into our hall, and during the pouring rain, and in the morning I had to go to Melbourne to help with the Baisak there. And I still remember checked in, and I got out the little brochure we'd given out to everybody. And when I opened it, I started crying. I was in a corner of the Perth airport, and I started crying because just so much inspiration of what had been done. So much really hard work, so much faith, so much energy. I got into that, and wow, that was really something inspiring. It actually worked. And so I remember things like that. I meditate. Wow, what have you done? Wow, this is really good. This is nice. And with that happiness and joy, straight away, it's so easy to get into deep meditation. That's why some of you have actually said, not just one, a few people, they said, after the morning talks and really good, powerful talks, it's so easy to meditate. Have you had a good talk? So they asked me, can you give a talk in the morning, the afternoon, mid-afternoon? It's very true, isn't it? When you're really inspired, you really have very, very good meditation. So you can't always expect inspiration from outside, but you can develop that inspiration by remembering all these inspiring events of your life, all these incredible things which have happened to you, these wonderful things about Buddha, Dhamma and Sangha, the wonderful things even about generosity. I always love telling the story. I love telling the story because it makes me inspired. It gives me this wonderful energy. How Dharmasala Nuns Monastery started. The Nuns Monastery we got at Gichi Ganap. Yeah, we wanted to have a place for women to become monks, so they could have the same opportunity as guys could. So what did you do? We just start a fund, first of all. No, when you're starting a fund, there's nothing really there. It's not inspiring. So I just got a bit of money here, and maybe about $20,000, $30,000, that's all. You can't buy much land with that. But still, we went looking for land. And it was Bianca and her husband. We were looking for land somewhere in Gichi Ganap, 30 acres, down Reen Road. That's the top of Reen Road. And as we passed, I looked out the window and saw this sign, 600 acres of ideal solitude. And that sort of triggered something. And I asked them, on the way back, let's have a look. And no, 600 acres, we've only got a little bit of money. We can't afford that. But I insisted. You know, sometimes I'm the spiritual director of the Buddhist Society of Western Australia. Sometimes they nickname me the spiritual dictator. And this was a time to dictate. We're going in. So we had a look at it. Looked amazing. And it was on auction. So he said, well, you know, it's an auction. You can always have a bid. You never know what happens. And we asked them, you know, roughly what it would be, about $1 million or $2 million or something. They said, oh, totally out of our league. But never mind, we can always go. And in the meantime, over in Bodhinyana Monastery, somebody said that there was a friend of theirs wanted to make a donation to the Nuns Monastery. And so they came to see me. And he said, and I've only seen him once. I've never seen him again. I don't know, this is weird sometimes. But he said, my wife has just given birth to my first child. It's a girl. He said, I'm a Buddhist, not one of your Buddhists, I think it was a Tibetan Buddhist or something. I'm a Buddhist, and I hear you're building a monastery for women. I don't know if my daughter would ever want to become a nun or even a Buddhist, it's up to her. But I want her to have the opportunity, if she wants, to live in a Buddhist monastery. So here's a check for $250,000. $250,000, you put the check. And I must admit, my mindfulness wasn't that very strong. I was shaking. $250,000, oh, it's a big check. And that's where we started from. So we had some money in the bank. And that monastery was to be auctioned. So, together with, remember Ajahn Chattamalo, those of you, he's over in Germany now. He was my second monk at the time. We went there early. And my goodness, we did some heavy chanting. Please bring the price down. We can't afford $1 million. Please bring the price down. So, you know, when you borrow a bit of money here and people pledge this here, we tallied it all up. We had about 600,000 in the bank, that's all. So then they started the auction. And they started the auction. And of course, it's really exciting. The fellow who bought food, I think, on Saturday, Eddie Fernando, he was our bidder. We told him, 600,000, that's all we can afford. And so the prices started going up. 300,000, 350, 400, 450, 500, 550. And Eddie put it out, 600,000. They were saying, please, shut up, shut up. Please, may all the heavenly beings close people's mouths so they can't speak. And then this guy put his hand up, 625. No! And then Eddie Fernando, he totally forgot all his instructions. 650. And our treasurer was sitting next to me. He said, he can't do this. We can't afford this. Stop him. We can't do this. He's got no authority. And of course, and I'll leave him alone. I know he can't afford it, but what the hell? And it passed at 650. We had our nuns' monastery.
That was brilliant. I always remember that. It was such inspiration. Just way over the top. We can't afford that. But of course, anything inspiring, it comes. And I always remember this. I think that must have been a Friday afternoon. And I gave the announcement at Nolomara's just after the talk or before the talk. I said, just to let you know that there was a property auction for our nuns' monastery. And we bought it. We got this big ovation afterwards. I always remember that. People were so inspired. This is inspirational stuff. This is stuff which you're not supposed to be able to do, but you do it. Ordaining bhikkhunis. That's inspirational stuff. Go against all of the obstacles. Push through. Yes, we do it. Isn't that inspiring? And what does that inspiration do? That really gets you set in your meditation, in your life. There is some beauty. There's some hope. There's people doing the impossible and getting there. And that realizes if you really have inspiration, you have power. And if you want to get enlightened, tap into that inspiration. It's right inside of you. You have all done such incredible things in your life. Now, what you've done for others, the kindness, the generosity, the goodness you've done, why not tap into that and get yourself incredibly inspired? Some of you may know, I know Eileen knows this, that remember when we used to do those concerts at the Victoria Hall in Singapore? I forget which one it was. There was one thing which was Passage of Time or something. And you know, I do my cameo appearance, you know, as Ajahn Brah. Yeah. Opening, but there's two of them. We did Opening and Passage of Time. And I remember that they was going to have a matinee in the afternoon. And then a couple of hours when all you guys had your dinner, and then another performance in the evening. And I just flew in straight from Perth on a Saturday morning, you know, pretty tired, straight to the theatre, straight had to perform. And after the first performance, I was exhausted, really tired. And, you know, lots of people coming in the evening ceremony. I think it was the minister, Corbyn One, he was coming in the evening as well. And I felt exhausted. You guys were okay, you could have some dinner. I had nothing. And I was really, really tired. So I found there was a closed exit there. And they shouldn't have closed exits in the theatre. That's really against the fire regulations. But I was very happy it was closed. Because I went down there. It was like a little cave, dark. And I just meditated instead of having lunch, dinner or anything, not even a cup of tea. You meditated there. And you start, this is what I do. I think of all the good things you've done, all the people you've inspired, all the amazing problems you've solved, all the great things which have happened, all of the beauty which you've created, all the amazing things which are happening. And I actually contemplated like that. You know, I used thought, but it was directed thought. Until you were so inspired. Oh, just the meditation was powerful and great. And you came out afterwards, and people thought I was on cocaine or something. Really? Oh, yeah, that sounds good. And I've used that so many times. The inspiration gives you a big boost of energy at any time, whenever you are exhausted. And especially when you're doing lots and lots and lots of meditation. So don't just sit there and say, ugh, okay, here we go again. I know I'm going to have to be dull and boring. You know, because I'm a nun, I'm supposed to meditate. I've got no choice. This sucks. No. You don't just do it because... You don't do it because you have to. You do it there. You say, yes, I'm going to get into this. I'm really going to have fun. And you really get into it. And you get inspired. When you get inspired, oh, the meditation's just so easy. Now, one of the experiences, this is a bit of insight as well on this experience. It's one of my favorite, my most memorable times with my teacher, Ajahn Chah. When he was getting very old, he got very sick. You know, he didn't suddenly have a stroke. It was coming over many months. And when we heard that he was getting sick, now the Western monk, we actually studied the Vinaya, and we found out that in the time of the Buddha, most monasteries had saunas, little jantagaras, you know, hot rooms, where the monks would have saunas. Those saunas were not invented in Sweden. They had them in India, you know, 2,500 years ago in the monasteries. So we thought, why don't we build a sauna? And it was, you know, slightly selfish, but it was slightly compassionate as well. You know, like mixed, like most things are. There's something in it for us, but it's also for our teacher. So we built this sauna, and we invited our teacher, Ajahn Chah, to come over once a week for a sauna for his good health. But it also meant he came to see us once a week. And he'd always give us a Dhamma talk, and then he'd have his sauna, and then go back. So, you know, it was a win-win for both of us. And he had his sauna, we had the Dhamma talk. So, one day, he gave this incredible good Dhamma talk. Even Ajahn Chah doesn't always hit the spot. You know, sometimes, you know, repeats things. Sometimes he's got no energy. Sometimes there may be other people get inspired, but not you. But this time, it's a really good one. And when you get inspired by a great Dhamma talk, afterwards you just want to meditate. You know, you just can't stop yourself. I'm so sort of uplifted. Normally, you know, being a disciple, you go and help your teacher, you know, with any jobs he can do, like, you know, handing him his towel or just washing his bathing cloth or whatever. There are other monks to do that, and I was so inspired. So instead of helping my teacher, I went quiet place behind the hall, sat down and meditated. It must have been for 2 hours, really deep, beautiful meditation, because I was inspired. Inspiration does that to you. And after I came out of meditation, I hadn't got a clue what time it was. Now the first thought, you know, was gratitude to your teacher. So maybe, just maybe, I could do something for him. So, you know, I walked towards the sauna. I realized I was too late because I saw him coming the opposite direction with two Thai lay people. We were going to pass each other. And as he came closer, you know, he obviously knew. You could tell body language if a person's had a good meditation or not. He soon knew that I'd just come out of a very deep meditation. And then you could actually feel him going inside you and reading your mind. He could do those things. And you knew it. And for once, I didn't mind him reading my mind. I was actually quite proud of my mind. Instead of the usual rubbish going on. So he read my mind. If you're sensitive, you could feel it when someone's doing that to you. You don't mind. He's your teacher. You trusted him. And obviously he saw it was really deep meditation. So then he decided to try and enlighten me. He looked at me really fiercely, with kindness but incredible strength. So you just could not take your eyes away from this man. He just held you there. And he said, Brahma Wangsa, why? It was like a shout, a bark, really fierce. Why? And the first answer came up, I don't know. I'm still young and stupid. Give me a chance. Now, that was the most stupid answer. This fellow was really trying hard, and I'd blown it. And what do people do, great masters, when you are really stupid and really dumb? They don't get angry and scold you. He just burst out laughing. The stupidity of his disciples was so intense. It gave Ajahn Chah so many, many happy moments. He laughed all the time. These Westerners, they come from these good universities. How stupid they are. It was really funny for him. So anyway. Then he screwed his face up again and got serious. Brahma Wangsa. Yes. I'll tell you the answer. Now I was really not just held by him, I was really interested. This is one of the greatest teachers of the last century. And he was going to give me a personal teaching. A deep one. The answer to one of the most incredible questions. Why? And he said, I'll tell the answer to the question, why? And the answer is, you ready? When you give a talk, you've got to make it exciting. Don't just give them the answer straight away. You've got to use suspense in Dhamma talks. There's not enough suspense in Dhamma talks these days. Everybody knows what you're going to say. They know the punchline to the joke. So you have suspense. So he looked at me and said, I'll tell you the answer. The answer to the question why is, there's nothing. there is nothing. There's nothing. He said, do you understand? I said, yes. He said, no, you don't. That was such a downer. I felt like lower than a worm. And then he went away laughing again. But at least I had the answer to the question why. And experiences like that, even though, you know, you don't get enlightened straight away, you really, that sticks in your head. The answer to the question why, there's nothing. That's really incredibly deep. So after a while, you keep in deep meditation, it keeps coming up, there's nothing, there's nothing, there's nothing. And that's the answer. Why? There's nothing. Do you understand? No, you don't. That was so inspiring, that whole interlude. And those are the things which I remember and I share with you. And that really gives you some oomph into your meditation, oomph into your life. Life can be so depressing. You turn on the news and it's a war in Iraq or a war somewhere else. There's always a war somewhere. There's politicians with their snouts in the trough taking all the money from you taxpayers. There's religious people having sex with their mistresses. And there's all sorts of terrible things happening. Blah. Really depressing. Blah. But then... then you come to places like this and see these amazing things happen. You get really inspired, uplifted. That gives you energy to go forward in life. And it's amazing that inspiration is actually what helps you achieve things. I say there's nothing to achieve, but it means it helps you really get deep and let go and see these things. You get inspired. It can happen. You can feel that power, and this is what will take you into those deep states. You're inspired, motivated, energized, and my goodness, you get incredible states of meditation. Insights just keep coming. You can't resist them. It's not what you've done. It's how you prepared your mind at the beginning. Rested, relaxed, inspired, off you go. So really, that is more the job of a teacher than to tell you what to find at the end of the path. I know lots of people say, well, what is Nibbana anyway? What happens when an enlightened person dies? You know, what? Describe the jhanas. The immaterial states, what are they? In detail. Come on, in detail. Don't just give me this ordinary rubbish. I want in detail. What's it like? So instead of telling people all this theory, that's where the Abhidharma came from, just people thinking too much. Instead of doing that, what we really want to do is to inspire people. Give them the basic instructions, inspire you, energize you, off you go. When you're inspired, when you've got the facilities, when you've got the basic instructions, that's all you need. You've got the tank full of gas, you've got the GPS, you've got your car, whoosh, and off you go to jhana land and to enlightenment land afterwards. And it all just happens by itself. So I can do my bit inspiring here. The monks and the nuns here can inspire. Look how quiet they sit. Perfectly still, just like the Buddha. And that's what happened to me, because when I first came to Perth, that was my training. Just the senior monk does all the talking, and everyone else shuts up. That's another, like, Thai tradition. So when I came here, I was number two monk with Ajahn Chakra, and he would give all the talks, he would give all the announcements. Questions would always be to him, and I'd just be sitting there making sure he had a cup of tea or a cup of coffee, whatever he needed. That was my job. But I wouldn't say anything. I'd meditate quietly. And then, after about 6 months, he went for a little holiday to visit Thailand. So I had to take over. So I gave a talk. And this young girl came up, about 13 years of age, after my talk, said, "That's amazing. That's wonderful. You can speak." I thought you were mentally disabled. She said that. Now I guarantee the man sitting next to me and the two nuns, they are not mentally disabled. They are good nuns. But they can be quiet and peaceful. Isn't that wonderful, inspiring to see that? And sometimes people have told me that they've come on a retreat and the monk sitting next to you or the nuns over there, just so inspiring just to see. Especially nuns, women living monastic life. So inspiring. And just sitting there, being peaceful. They're not sitting there so peaceful. They may be nodding, whatever. At least they're meditating. They're doing it. And it gets so inspiring to see that. So sometimes I say, Ajahn Brahm, you give good talks, but the people who inspire me are the ones sitting next to you, just to be quiet and still and meditate so much. Thank you so much. So it's those inspirations which are there for you. It's given free on this retreat. Please take them up. Remember them, cultivate them, guard them, cherish them, like flowers you put on your shrine, and you keep watering, make sure they last as long as possible. And then those inspirations, they really get into you. Not only do they make you happy, they make you healthy too. Inspiration overcomes many diseases. You just got the energy, you can feel it through your body. Incredible, powerful energy. Just sometimes, well, I'll tell you one of my first inspiration stories. It's not quite real inspiration, but it worked. I was a student after going to Cambridge, I went to Durham for a year, to do a teaching course. The only reason was because my girlfriend was up there. That's the only reason I chose that university. But it's really a cold part of England, and I had a terrible cold one day, a flu. So no way could I go into the lectures that morning. I was in bed in this house all by myself. Felt terrible. Your nose was running, the eyes were streaming, coughing, sneezing, the whole works, and having a fever, you felt terrible. And then somebody was knocking on the door of this house. And I was the only one there, everyone else was at the university. So I dragged myself up out of the bed, because this guy would not stop knocking, in my pajamas. Answered the door, what do you want? And this guy said, I've got a delivery for you. And it was my hi-fi system. Those of you who are old like me, before iPods, you had these big boxes just to play any vinyl record, about three or four of them, to get good quality sound. And so it was mine. I just sent it up from London. I said, oh, thank you. And I went up to the room, unpacked everything, plugged it all together, and put on the first record, which was Jimi Hendrix. And then I noticed, listen to that first track, my cold and flu had totally gone. It vanished completely. No sneezing, no gut coming out of your nose and eyes. Felt really good. That was miraculous. So if ever I have a very bad cold these days, I get out a Jimi Hendrix. No, can't do that anymore. But it was just that boost of happiness, that happiness energy. Just cured a flu within an hour. I remember that. I'm not exaggerating. Before you were really sick, you won't imagine these things. You had all the stuff coming out of your nose and mouth. And 1 hour later, perfectly healthy, no cough, no sneeze, nothing. That's really amazing just what happens. And that is quite natural. You get this big boost of energy inside your body, through some happiness. But inspiration is much more powerful than listening to your favorite music. So powerful, it just cleans out so many of the illnesses and stuff which you have. And it clears up so many of the defilements of sloth and torpor or lust or desire. Because when you're happy, you don't want anything. You're having fun, you're inspired, you've got so much energy in this present moment, so much happiness. Who wants to think about anything? You're enjoying this moment so much. So the inspiration really puts energy and joy into the moment. So you develop that. Sometimes you can't do reflections of the Buddha, Dhamma, and the Sangha. You get your favorite talks on an iPod. Whenever you're down, you just start listening to these. And, oh, this is brilliant stuff. Great. It really gets you inspired, uplifted, and the problems disappear. You don't get so depressed, angry, or even sick. Or you just use your power of memory to start to remember just some of the most inspiring times in your life, like I deliberately do. Don't remember all the downside. Don't remember the time you got divorced. Don't remember the time you got sacked from work. Don't remember the time you got called a pig. Why do you remember those stupid things? Remember the time when someone said, Ajahn Brahm, you're the Buddhist equivalent to Elvis Presley. They said that. You are the Elvis Presley of Buddhism. I thought, wow, I actually kept that. It's in my room somewhere. It makes me laugh and be inspired. The Elvis Presley of Buddhism. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I keep those memories. All the stupid things I've done and the bad things when people criticize me, I forget about those. So this is where you inspire yourself. And you remember those inspirations. You make use of them. Especially in these last days of meditation retreat. So you've really got this incredible energy. So easy to meditate. No restlessness, no dullness. Because you're empowered. And then off you go. Get incredible meditation. Say, wow, this is how we meditate. None of this watching the breath and noting this business. Get the foundations right. Inspiration. Make peace, be kind, be gentle. Just awareness, kindfulness. Inspires you and it gives it huge power. And off you go. You have the greatest meditations in your life. All the insights, enlightened. And you can tell everybody about it and inspire the boots off them too. That's what happens. Actually, you don't wear boots. I was going to say to inspire something else off you, but that might be rude. But this is what you do. This is how it works. Inspiration. Okay, have I inspired you? That's not inspiring. Sadhu. 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 That's inspirational. Okay, have a great morning. Inspire me, inspire somebody else.